There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along for another couple hours of live local talk. And we'll be talking to you on the text line and the phone line at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, on the way this hour, we're going to talk with some state politics as Representative Chris Pringle joins us. You know, I just keep doubling down on my questions about where we're going to be with state budgets and how that's going to work in regular session. Or are we looking how many special sessions? How will that be done? We'll talk to Representative Pringle about that coming up in just a little bit. But now, AL1's Representative Bradley Byrne is joining us, and so much to talk about. Thanks for your time.
Good to be with you, Sean.
Good to have you here. And I got questions about the state and reopening, but before we go any further on that, one of the things that drives text messages and phone calls around here have been questions about whether it's the individual one-time payment for citizens in AL1 or also the questions we get about the Paycheck Protection Program. You've been on with us, guiding us through this and the vote on the CARES Act. Now we hear the discussion of this. Is it fair to call it a round two, or is it a, what do you call this new piece of legislation?
Well, it's just a supplemental to the CARES Act. What we're doing is we're plussing up some accounts that we already put money in, but we know in the case of the PPP program, there's not enough. We're concerned we're going to run out of money for the hospitals, so we're plussing up those accounts to make sure that we can provide the money to them so the money's there when they need it.
Okay. Now, one of the discussions here over the last couple of days, and I know that late last week the money was out, and there's people that are in the pipeline, have made their filings, have not gotten money. But then the story comes out this week, who did get the money, right? That's been the big talker. There's Shake Shack or whomever else. There's other companies listed here that got their money, and they're big companies. Hey, I thought PPP was for small business.
It's for people that have 500 or less employees. So if you're a bank and you've got a customer that has 450 employees, and he comes to you early on in the process, and you got another one that has 5 employees, and he comes to you later on in the process, who do you prioritize? And it sounds like some of the banks have prioritized the bigger customers. The truth of the matter is that when you just look at the data for Alabama, you can tell a lot of smaller businesses got them too. So in Alabama, we got over 28,000 of these loans for almost $5 billion. We don't have 28,000 big businesses in Alabama, even between 200 and 500. So, and I know because I've talked to a lot of smaller businesses, but it does look like nationwide that there was a disproportionate amount of this money that went to the bigger players. So what the bill that the Senate passed yesterday did is put another $310 billion into the program, and some of that specifically earmarked to the smaller banks that are making the loans to the smaller businesses. And so I anticipate we're going to vote on that in the House tomorrow. The president will sign it. We can get back to making the loans that we need to make.
And that's what
we know. We've saved over 10 million jobs. We know that.
And I think people are, I mean, there are people who have gotten it that are happy with it. I think you have a lot of people that have not gotten it that are, you know, real interested to make sure they're going to get it. This is not even maybe it's a question you could answer. But it's... where does it end? And not saying that in a... I don't want to have a negative lean on it. But is it going to be available for every small business in the country? I mean, has there anybody tallied how much money this could be? And, you know, when maybe this amount of money runs out and then there's a supplemental 2 or supplemental 3, do we ever say no? We being we the people out of Washington.
Well, being an unprecedented circumstance that we've got, we don't know.
Okay.
We can only make projections. And the latest projection is that this extra amount of money will get out there to a lot of smaller companies that didn't get the first tranche. And with, you know, if the big players got taken care of in the first tranche, then you're going to cover a lot more people with the second tranche because they don't need as much money per company. And that's the hope. Now, if we get to the end of that money in 2 weeks, like we got to the end of this first tranche in 2 weeks, then we'll have to, you know, get back together again and say, what are we going to do? Now, we're going in tomorrow, supposedly. I haven't heard that officially, but I'm told we're going to go in tomorrow just for the purposes of voting on this bill and potentially on making some rule changes for proxy voting. We're not due to come back until May the 4th. Some of us are not happy about that. I don't think that's going to have any bearing on what Nancy Pelosi decides to do. But assuming we come back on May the 4th, I think the first question everybody's going to have is, all right, what next?
I want to get in that. I do want to just a couple more questions on the vote tomorrow, if it does go through. Is this supplemental? Is it like the CARES Act? Are there riders in this, or is it just clean?
I'm told, and we're still going through it now in my office, but I'm told that it's clean, that it's just a plus up in certain places. Although, as I say, they designated, you know, some of this money specifically for smaller banks, which I'm all for. We did, by the way, plus up by $50 billion the emergency loan program for SBA. That's important. And, of course, we're putting out a lot more money out there, both to the hospitals and to the whole testing regime, so that we can make sure we're flooding the testing thing with all the money that they need. I think the testing issue is a lot better than it's being portrayed at the national level, but that's a different topic.
And you mentioned hospitals. I do, if we have time, I do want to talk about testing. But on the hospital side, look at it. It was, I think the Monday presser, or maybe a tweet from Mayor Stimson on Monday, who said the hospitals here in town were maybe below 50% capacity, right? And this whole flattening the curve was about making sure there were empty hospital beds should we need them, and ventilators and all those kind of things. And now with those hospitals less than 50% of capacity, I know there are hospitals around the country hurting. I hadn't even thought about it until I had a physician on last week who said, oh, well, we've had furloughs with the hospital system, and you should have seen my jaw hanging down. I said, I figured y'all would. He said, no, haven't had the work. We had to furlough people. So what about those hospitals?
Well, that's a good point. What we did was, in late March, we asked all the hospitals to stop elective surgery. That's where they make their money.
Sure.
I mean, they don't make money on this other stuff. So when you do away with elective surgery, anybody that has anything to do with elective surgery, they put them on furlough. So one of the things that we're recommending to the governor and my recommendations today is that we go back and allow these hospitals to have elective surgeries, allow dentists and other people to reopen up for their stuff. The truth of the matter is that the experience in New York, which was like half the deaths in America so far, has been driving a lot of what we've been talking about, and I'm all for making sure we do what we need to do to take care of New York. But our experience here has been dramatically different. We haven't come anywhere close to using not just our hospital beds, but our ICU beds. We haven't come close to using all of them. So we did not stress our system in Alabama or in our part of Alabama, except economically. So once again, it's time for us to have some economic discussions so that we can fix that problem, because we can't fix the rest of the problems if we don't fix that one.
That's for sure. Coming right back, more with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. We're going to talk about his recommendations to the governor. As I've been talking about the last week or so, Governor Ivey has sought recommendations, opinions, and one of them being the members of Congress from right here in Alabama. So our own Congressman Bradley Byrne will talk about his recommendation for reopening the state. By the way, too, I saw a nail salon earlier today that had their open sign on. I drove by just to look. They were really closed. They were pulling a joke on everybody. All right, be right back. News is next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile online, fmtalk1065.com. Continue our conversation with Congressman Bradley Byrne and talking about some of what's going on in Washington, but also Governor Ivey reached out to you and other members of our House delegation asking for what to do, right? I mean, what was it? Your recommendations, your advice? How did she couch that?
She wanted a recommendation from us of how we would reopen the economy in our parts of the state. So I think we all convened task force made up of business leaders in our districts. We went way beyond all that. We reached out to all sorts of people, got a whole bunch of data in, looked at the case data both at the state level and at our district level. We're able to use the president's guidelines, which Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth's group wasn't able to use because that just came out too late for us to be able to use those guidelines. But I just got to tell you, after looking at all and talking to the people on our task force and thinking it through, our recommendation is that the governor can reopen those parts of the county that have been shut down in our district on May the 1st. But that's under what we call phase one under the president's guidelines, which is not an unlimited opening. We're still going to have to maintain social distancing. We still can't have groups of more than 10 people. All the businesses that open are going to have to take some, you know, extra efforts to make sure they protect their own employees, themselves, as well as their customers. The big thing in my recommendation, beyond the recommendation regarding the hospitals and healthcare industry, was the beach and restaurants. And that was the hardest one to work through to figure out exactly how you do that. But I think we have, and I've talked to people down at the beach, and I'm comfortable that we could reopen the beach beginning on May the 1st. Now, Sean, let me say this. If she pushed the button today and said reopen the beach on May 1st, they're not going to be fully reopened because a lot of those businesses down there are going to have to get their people back together again. If you're a restaurant, you got to figure out what your food chain supply is. So it's going to be more of a gradual increase in what's going to be open at the beach, but I think we can safely start that on May the 1st.
You know, it's frustrating when you talk about the beach, and of course with that comes the whole economy you're describing, but physically just the beach, using that as almost a touchstone on this, that the beach is just fine. It's the congregation of people, and we may not have the resources to enforce it, but it is frustrating that Alabamians, we can't go just to the beach. If we follow the rules and the separation and all that, even though, like, you and I could get in the boat, Congressman, and come around to that same beach and stay out there in the boat and fish for some trout or something like that, somebody couldn't come from the beach and do the same thing. That's it just seems like there should be some kind of nuanced enforcement there where if you're by yourself or, you know, socially distant, you could use the beach.
Well, what we're going to say is that we're going to, what I'm recommending, I should say, is the governor's decision. But what we're recommending is that you open the beach, that people can be out on the beach in groups of no greater than 10 people, and you've got to stay 6 feet away from the next group to you. I've talked to the mayors of Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, and Dolphin Island. I've talked to the sheriff of Baldwin County. We've talked to the people that run the Bonsecure Wildlife Refuge because they've got a beach. We've talked to the people of the Department of Conservation that run the Gulf State Park. They are prepared and have the resources. And they've told me what the resources are, so I'm comfortable with what they're telling me, that they can and will enforce those rules. Now, here's what I keep telling everybody. We all have a responsibility to enforce these rules. We need to self-enforce these rules. Now, I know there's some knotheads out there, and that's why you have police officers, because you've got knotheads out there. If you're worried about knotheads, let's use our common sense. Go down to the beach with a big group of people. And, you know, space out. There's plenty of beach down there. Space out. And if we do that, there's not going to be a problem. Now, one nuance for our beaches is that a lot of them are, you know, condos. And the condos the condo associations own the beach out to the mean high tide waterline. And so, in addition to the police being responsible, what we've recommended is, look, we've got to tell those condo associations, property owners associations, the hotels, hey, you're responsible, too, for your guests. Make sure they're not out there in big groups. Enforce that. And make sure that they're not getting within 6 feet of one another. And if you don't, you're going to take a risk that we're going to have to shut you down, and nobody wants to do that. So if we all work together, I'm convinced we can open the beaches, and it won't be a big deal.
So that, yeah, the beach is a big part of it, but let's talk about businesses, you know, in town or all over AL1. People will say, hey, you know, there's these big box stores have been able to stay open, and mom and pops have been closed. If mom and pops could comply with the same rules the big box store is doing, shouldn't they be able to be open as well?
Absolutely, and that's what we recommend in our report. Now, as you say, they're going to have the same distancing efforts that the big boxes are. But I actually think it'll be easier on the smaller retailers. I mean, they don't have masses of customers coming in. They're closer to the customers to begin with, and they're going to be in a better position to sort of enforce that to begin with. So absolutely, my recommendations are to open the smaller retailers, mom and pops, the personal services like barber shops and hair salons, et cetera. Gyms can reopen. But everybody's going to be under these restrictions. So it's not a complete wide-open reopening as some people at the national news media are being so critical of. This is, under the president's guidelines, a phase one reopening with lots of limitations, lots of restrictions, but ones I think that for a temporary period of time we're all going to be able to live with, so long as we can get back out there and do our thing.
You know, I wonder about reaction. Let's say we get this done sometime beginning of May or earlier, but it sounds like, according to Governor Ivey right now, as of yesterday, it's not going to be earlier than April 30th. So once we open back up, and I've heard some people say, I'm not epidemiologist, that we would see a rise in cases of coronavirus by the nature of just more people on the landscape. We'll see if that happens. But if it does, do you think that would kick in an immediate return to stay at home? Or do you think that we're at a point now there's some expected or accepted rate of increase in cases?
Well, Dr. Fauci and others have been very clear. If you open up the economy, you're going to have some increase in cases. And so we should expect that. The question is, do you open it up to such an extent that you have a sort of big outbreak and it overwhelms your healthcare system? Well, with the limitations that are in the phase one guidelines, which Dr. Fauci supports, I don't think that's going to happen. Look, even before, we didn't stress out the hospitals in our area. So that sort of underscores why I think it is safe for us to go ahead and use this phase one set of guidelines to reopen our part of the economy. Look, you know, I'm going to go up tomorrow and vote for this bill. But there's not enough money in the world that Congress can put out there, that the Federal Reserve can put out there, that can take the place of a fully functioning American economy.
Right.
We have got to get back to work, or we're going to lose what we've all sort of taken for granted as the American lifestyle. And I think that the health care risks here have been mitigated, and I think that we can continue to mitigate them going forward.
Yeah, but there's a second part of the health care, and it's something you mentioned weeks, if not, I would say maybe a month or more ago on this show, and it is one that now, of course, more and more people are talking about, and that is the mental health issue affecting people that have had no income, their life's dream and their small business shut down. I mean, those are also healthcare issues.
Absolutely. We actually have a couple places in our report where we talk about it, not just what our experience was down here in the aftermath of the BP oil spill, but what we're now beginning to see at the national level. I mean, ABC reported an 891% increase in calls to the National Helpline. I mean, we know that we're going to face major mental health issues here. The state of Alabama is not in a position, because they cut back funding for mental health during the aftermath of the Great Recession. The state of Alabama is not in a position to be able to handle this. So that is a healthcare issue, and I keep sort of pounding away on that at the national level. But we do put recommendations for what we need to do about mental health in Alabama in our report, and I think it's a consideration you have to take into account when you decide when it's time to reopen.
You mentioned all the spending in the world couldn't fix things the way a functioning economy does. I want to talk about that. Jay also had texted in, said, can Congressman Byrne make a comment on his thoughts of the potential tax legislation down the road that this influx in spending will create in years to come?
Well, initially, I think you're going to see whatever the next phase that we do here. I think the president's going to come out for further tax relief for people. So I think you'll see a reduction in taxes for certain people. But what he's really referring to is, all right, we're about to add another $4 trillion to the debt. At some point, that's got to be paid back. And the answer is, absolutely, it's going to have to be paid back. We can't do it right now because of the situation we're in. But I think we failed. We had an opportunity during the 2010s to do something, and we didn't do it. And in the 2020s, when we get over this and we get back to growing again, we as American people got to sit down and talk about what we're going to do about the deficits we run every year and the incredible amount of national debt that we piled up between the Great Recession and now this.
A- I think that's one thing that is not going to be popular, and that's why it seems to not get discussed in the 2010s. And I worry that y'all can get traction on that in the 2020s in Washington.
Well, for better or for worse, it won't be me.
That's right.
It'll be somebody else. And you're right, it's not popular as a candidate in an election to get up and say, we're going to have to deal with this debt problem. But, you know, that's the responsible way to deal with this. And as a private citizen, after December 31, I'm going to be a supporter of reasonable actions by the Congress and the President to do what we've got to do once we get over this economic problem we've got right now, to get our deficits under control and start to reduce our debt.
Do you have, before we run out of time here, we started off talking about this supplemental to the CARES Act. So for small business owners in our area listening, if all things go normally, you will go to vote tomorrow. You feel like it's going to be a easy yes vote in the House? No issue on that?
Yeah, I think that's going to be an easy yes vote.
Okay.
This proxy voting change in our rules is going to be very controversial, I predict, but I think the supplement to the CARES Act will actually go through pretty easily.
Has Treasury or anybody given you an idea then, once y'all sign that, when the cash will go to the banks to be making those loans?
Well, they haven't said immediately, but, you know, ASAP. So as quickly as they can move the money, I think it will. Now, if they can reopen them on that loan program on Friday, that would be ideal. Because you've got a lot of loan applications out there pending. You've got people whose banks have said, look, we're not accepting any new applications till they get this fixed. So the quicker we turn that spigot back on, the better it is for everybody. I think we will, and I'm hopeful Friday's the day when they can restart everything. But I've talked to a bunch of bankers in our area, and they're ready to make the loans. My hat's off to these bankers. They've worked overtime to get this done.
All right. And so a yes vote from you tomorrow, and your recommendation to Governor Ivey to surmise, I know you wrote in-depth, but with some staggered opening here, you're recommending to reopen Alabama.
Yeah, reopen Alabama, at least our part of Alabama, on May 1 under the Phase 1 guidelines from the President and CDC.
All right, very good. Congressman Byrne, as always, I appreciate your time, and we'll be talking to you again very soon.
Great to be with you.
All right, Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us. And coming back, we're going to be joined by State Rep Chris Pringle, District 101. We're going to talk a lot about what the state is facing here, as there's recommendations coming from our federal delegation, like Congressman Byrne. Also recommendations coming from the state level. There's a lot of voices saying reopen Alabama. We'll talk to Representative Pringle about that. Also, you know my favorite subject. We'll talk about the budgets and where we stand in Montgomery. Do all that coming up next, right here on Midday Mobile.